Comedy, says journalist Joanne Brookfield, is one of the truly egalitarian art forms. You can't show up at an Australian ballet show, she says, thinking, yeah, I reckon I'll have a crack at this tonight. My mate said I'll be good at it, and an hour later be on stage. But comedy, in theory at least, welcomes all, she says. But if you're a woman, it's traditionally been harder to find your place on stage and have your voice heard. Are things getting better? Joanne Brookfield's new book is called No Apologies, and she's interviewed over 60 women who work in comedy, both on stage and behind the scenes. Joanne Brookfield, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Australia's premier comedy event, the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, is underway. And you write in the book that you grew up looking at comedy on TV and going, oh my God, it's a thing and maybe I could do that. Mm. Is it different seeing it live though? Is it more powerful?
Oh, absolutely. There's no comparison. I mean, obviously, seeing it like these days on streaming services, YouTube, Netflix is where most people would consume it now. But back in the day, it was just TV for me. But yeah, there's just something about being in that in the room. There's a visceral dimension to it that is just absent when you watch it on the screen. So yeah, there's nothing quite like being in the room with an audience and everyone laughing together and looking at each other and those little moments. And yeah, it's a pretty magical art form actually for that reason, I think.
You talk about the early female trailblazers that you saw on the TV, and what was it like going to see them live for the first time?
I guess it's a really exciting thing to, you know, when you're sort of growing up and you know, you're in the suburbs and all the rest of it, the idea that someone's on TV is, you know, there's a great leap there from where you're at in life, and you know, you perceive that as being very successful, very famous because you've seen them on TV. So to then be in the same room with them, even though albeit they're on stage, but to be in the same room, it's suddenly like, wow, they're just right there in front of me. And then beyond that, in terms of the power of the effect that has, is you go, well, if they're in the room and I can see them here on this stage, then potentially there's a path for me to follow. I could potentially do this too.
You do talk a lot though about how differently women can be perceived on a stage than men can. And there's a really interesting story from a circus performer whose co-partner said, oh, why don't you do a bit more with veils, have a nice little delicate act. She's like, no, I want to do the fire sticks and the sword swallowing. But there's those assumptions that underlie women's performance, aren't there?
I think so. I'd like to think that that's changing slowly, it would appear. But yeah, I think that's one of the issues with being a woman generally, is that we've just got these narrowly defined roles where, you know, we're only allowed, inverted commas, to be a certain way or do a certain thing. And if you step outside of those boundaries, then you're sort of often punished and told to get back in your box. And I guess that's one of the great things about comedy, that kind of smashes down a lot of those expectations.
It's really still unusual too for women to physically take up space on a stage, isn't it? To be there under the spotlight and holding someone captive for an hour with their voice.
Well, Rachel Berger has always talked about that, the potency of stand-up, particularly for women. And that's right. I mean, when you think about it, how often is a woman, you know, exactly that, elevated, amplified, spotlit, you know, the whole attention of a room, you know, and certainly in a festival context, people are paying to listen to one woman talk for an hour. I don't know that there's many other situations where that takes place. So I think that's really powerful as well, to sort of command that attention.
Well, you get to keep your clothes on.
Well, yes, is that true? But yeah, I guess it's just that, and to make that room of people laugh, like that's a really, you know, powerful, intoxicating thing to do as well. So, you know, and we're not used to seeing it. So it's great to, you know, again, you know, hopefully changes the expectations over time.
I saw Hannah Gadsby say something the other day, you know, Australia's latest, greatest comedy success story overseas, saying, you know, I've rarely had the loudest voice in any room. And that really struck me, because she is such a big story now, but obviously she struggled with the ability to use her voice to command attention. Do you think that's something that women have to kind of fight extra hard to get past?
I think so, because we're not conditioned culturally and socially to dominate any space. So to be in that, you know, position on stage, it's sort of, I was just talking to Steph Tidstall, who's here with me at the moment, just before, about that idea of confidence, and, you know, you have to practice that. you know, it's not an innate thing that we by default find. And so I guess that's partly why I've written the book, to sort of explore those ideas of permission and, you know, allowing yourself to claim that space and be seen, be heard, say what you want to say and say what you think. And, you know, it's a pity that these are almost still radical concepts to some extent.
The book's called No Apologies, and we're hearing from Joanne Brookfield. And with us today is Steph Tisdall, a proud Murray woman, comedian. Welcome to the program, Steph.
G'day. Thank you very much for having me.
It is a pleasure. Now, I know every comedian gets asked about their first gig, but could you tell us a bit about how you first stepped up onto the stage?
I did comedy as a dare. So I was just backpacking through the UK it's such a long story, which I won't say, but like basically I was backpacking because I was having a lot of problems with anxiety. And so I was being a yes man while I was traveling or in my case, a why not woman. I have a tattoo of a snowman saying why not on my wrist. I'll show you guys, but radio can't.
Can see that. Yep. But definitely a snowman saying why not.
And so, I just couldn't say no to anything. And everybody who I met, I told them I can't say no to anything. And then that all culminated in somebody daring me to do stand-up comedy.
I can feel my heart rate increasing just at the thought. That's a horrific way to approach anxiety, but obviously it worked.
Well, see, but I reckon though, right, you have to remove every safety net, because if you don't, you'll always allow yourself a certain amount of excuses and you'll never kind of push forward. So as long as you take it, like, I know that's really weird. It's not good advice for most people, but if you take away every safety net, then you become supremely aware of your own capabilities. And it also forces you to take initiative and to have confidence or listen to your gut and all of those things that we find hard to do. So
you were up on stage, and how were you
feeling?
I wasn't
on a stage. They didn't even do comedy. I stood up on a chair in a pub.
The best bit about that story.
And I just said, because I got my friend to get me a few drinks, and then I said, look, if I'm any good, buy me a drink. If I'm not, I will definitely know by your faces. And then I had drinks from everybody in the bar. It was like the coolest. It's one of those things where, like, I'm not even sure it happened anymore. Like, I've only told the story and I go, that's a good story, but it did happen. Like, I know that it did. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, backpacker validation. Here's beer. So what content did you talk about, Steph, when you did that?
Oh, my God. I spoke a lot about my dad being our neighbourhood vigilante and about Australia and how, despite being Aboriginal, I probably don't look like the stereotypical Australian. I don't know, just some things about the ocean, how I'm scared of the ocean and, you know, how weird it is that we love swimming in the beach even though literally the moon controls tides. Like, we're controlled by the moon. I don't know why people go in that water. We'll never understand. So, yeah.
Was it easier? I mean, you've performed here as well now, obviously. Mm. Was it easier to talk about being Indigenous overseas than it was in Australia?
I didn't talk about it so I didn't do a huge amount of comedy before I moved to Scotland. And I had jokes about being Indigenous that I might tell to my family or whatever, but I absolutely never spoke about it because I was so, so scared of stepping a foot wrong. And so when I moved to Scotland, which was a couple of years later, I wasn't backpacking, I actually moved there. I found it really easy then to talk about just how many things I wish were different in Australia. And I'll tell you what, when I came back to Australia, I went straight back to not talking about my heritage. And it took me a good 6 months. I ended up taking a year off, actually, to build up the confidence to talk about my heritage again.
So why was that? Were you afraid of the reaction you might get from the audience?
Absolutely. And I have received, like, it's funny when people kind of tell their stories about hecklers, because I've only ever really had nice heckles unless I've had really racist ones, which I have. And it's very hard to know what to do in that situation. But I also think it's that entire thing, like, the reason why this book is fantastic, right, is that I think that the biggest fear that I had was that, you know, we have Nakia Louie and Shira Lee Hood, but there's only, like, Nakia Louie isn't a straight stand-up comedian, and I don't know Shira Lee Hood particularly well. And so I hadn't really ever seen an Indigenous female comedian before. And certainly talking about both in inverted commas, white and black things, right? And I had this big fear of, well, I'm not allowed to be the spokesperson for this. It's not my place. Somebody has to give me permission for that, because what if my story isn't correct? But the reality is my story, so it's always going to be correct. And the more stories we can expose to audiences, the more that we begin to break things down. And this book, I was actually just saying to Joanne outside, I said, you know, obviously I think it's going to be successful. She's a great writer, all of that. And I said, but even despite all of those things, this is such a generous gift for women in comedy.
I love that you won the Deadly Funny competition at the Comedy Festival in 2014, and now you're performing on ABC TV and radio. It's great. You had a really interesting conversation with your manager at one point about doing gigs just to tick someone else's diversity box. Mm. Where are you at with that now?
Yeah, it's to be honest, it's probably the biggest fear that I have. It's always the go-to thing. If somebody wants to bring you down, they say that your success is based on the fact that you tick boxes, you're both a woman and an Indigenous woman. Like, man, I'm worth so many points, you know what I mean? They can have an all-white male lineup. As long as they've got me, they're fine. I'm diversity. But and it's like, it's such a fear of mine, but that's why I have to keep on doing it, right, so that other people then know that it's not because of that. But like the first thing I said when I signed with A-List is I sat down and had a conversation. I said, I need you to be as passionate about this as I am. And, you know, basically my priority of gigs is, like, number one will always be gigs for community. And then, you know, second priority will be the highest paying. You know, but, yeah. but number one's always, like, you know, gigs for mob and gigs for my people, and things will actually go towards making a difference in that realm.
We're hearing from Steph Tisdall, who's part of the Comedy Festival this year and appearing on ABC Radio and TV, that's proudly, and Joanne Brookfield, whose new book is called No Apologies. It's about women in comedy. And Joanne, you said before that you thought that scene was gradually changing. How important has it been to have support from women for up-and-coming women in seeing that scene change?
I think women have always supported other women, but I think we're at a really exciting point in history, an unprecedented point in history, because thanks to social media, we all have a platform to say what we think, and we can now reach each other across the oceans from our little laptops at home. And I think that has enabled these conversations. Like, it's really easy when, if you're like, just to use a comedy example, if you're the only woman on the bill and there's no one else to talk to about your experience that night, it's really easy to go, well, I'm the only one that's experienced this. I'm the only one that's gone through this. But suddenly when you start talking to other women, you go, oh, you've gone through that. Oh, me too. And that's exactly why that hashtag is so perfect. And so I think now we're all realizing that we're all in this together and that we are stronger together. And so more and more we're seeing that. And that's why I've profiled some of the women in the book who are at a really grassroots level are trying to create that change in a really practical kind of way by opening rooms that where they're very consciously focusing on the diversity of their lineups and creating a space that's nurturing and encouraging. So in Sydney, there's the What She Said team that have an all-female room that's just going absolutely gangbusters. And in Melbourne, Lisa Skye is doing a lot of work around the Safety House Guide, which she releases during the Adelaide Fringe and the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Laura Lee Mathias is a regular visitor to Melbourne. She lives in London primarily, but, you know, opening rooms called Lemon, and she's got a commitment to sort of mental health as well on top of everything else. So there's all these women now who are, you know, and the Kates from Get Kraken are a fantastic example of that, because you've only got to watch the show to see their commitment to diversity in terms of casting. But, you know, having spoken to them, like, behind the scenes as well, they're reaching out to people that to make sure that their writing team is diverse, and equally that their crew is as well, to give positions and opportunities, because TV is such a hard business to get into, to, you know, to reach out to people and give them a chance as well. And I think the more women do this, like, the more women get the idea that, oh, I can do this. I was saying that to Steph just before with the book, like, you sort of realise that, you know, we've all got some level of power to create some kind of change. And so it depends on who you are and what you're doing. So for Steph, it's obviously speaking to, you know, Indigenous people. But for me, it's like, I've got an opportunity to write a book. And so then I've got the power to include however many women I want to include in that. And that means I can throw some attention onto all these other voices that you might not have heard of, but you might buy the book because Judith Lucy's on the cover, Denise Scott's on the cover. You might buy the book for that reason, but you're going to learn about Steph and, you know, Anna Piper Scott, who's a trans woman, and, you know, all these other women in the book that, you know, are doing excellent, exciting, interesting work. And, you know, I
just want to say thank you.
Oh.
No, seriously, thank you for doing that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Because that stuff really, really matters.
Well, and yeah. Steph, you mentioned the practicalities before. You know, I've got to prioritise some paying gigs too because yeah. I've got a life. And I imagine that some of that stuff hits harder for women. You know, we get paid less than men on average. We're often primary carers for kids. What happens if you want to have a family and do a 3-week run of night gigs? Mm. How does that all work for women?
I've got a chapter in there called The Juggle for that reason because, you know, I think that's something that, well, as a society broadly, I mean, this is a book about women in comedy, but really it's a book about all women. Yeah. But through the lens of comedy, like, I think the arts industry as a sector needs to do a bit more thinking about how we can make life a bit easier for this very reason, because it's not a regular 9-to-5 lifestyle. You do work at nights during a festival. You're at 6 nights a week. You're often interstate for gigs. I know when I first interviewed Steph, I write for the Age newspaper here in Melbourne, and you were talking about how it's difficult just outside of having children, just having part-time jobs, because when you're getting gigs in Hobart and Sydney and Adelaide and whatever, it's just difficult to be constantly asking for time off. So just on a practical level like that, add kids into the mix. You know, it's just
exactly. Yeah. You
know. And Steph, I wanted to finish up with you. I mean, has it all been worth it? We've heard about The Juggle. We've heard about some of the very bad gigs that people talk about in the book. But for you, has it been worth that first getting up on the chair and letting rip?
I can't even tell you how much comedy saves my life, right? This is going to be the lamest answer. So there's a dating app.
I don't know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I'm interested.
There's a dating app, but it asks you questions. And there's always been this one question that stuck out in my mind. And it says, if you could pinpoint your biggest pursuit in life so far, would it be knowledge, money, power, love, or expression? And a lot of people that I know either say knowledge or love, but mine is expression, because I don't think that you can actually effectively express yourself unless you're doing so with love, with knowledge, and it's powerful, and, you know, hopefully you can make money. But, like, I think it is the most generous gift that you can give to anybody is to express yourself, or to express the truth in a little nice package, which comedy does, and give it to others to digest, because we're desperate for storytelling. Like, we started off as a community, you know, like humans, we're pack animals. So, yeah, I think we crave that now.
And the book's called No Apologies. It starts with Wonder Woman, and it's all about expression all the way through. Joanne Brookfield wrote it, and Steph Tisdall is in it. And she's also on Away, RN's Indigenous Culture Program, on Saturday at 6 p.m. and in the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, which is on over the next few weeks. Thank you both so much for coming in.
No, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for allowing us to express ourselves.
It has been my absolute pleasure. You're listening to Life Matters here on RN.